Welcome to the Intuitive Awakening Podcast. I'm your host, Deanna Riddick. I'm an author, teacher, and eternal seeker of truth. I am on a mission to spread metaphysical knowledge to help you awaken your spirit. If you want to learn how to open the door to your divine self, you are in the right place. Hi, everyone. Welcome to Intuitive Awakening. Thank you for joining me for today's episode. I have a lovely guest, Anne Edgecliff, is joining us today. So I want to tell you a little bit about Anne before we get started. So from a young age, Anne has had a unique connection with the spirit world, which she's honed over the years, integrating her channeling abilities with her Reiki healing. Her experiences, specifically those in hospice care, have shaped her understanding of the energies involved in life and death. In her new book, Transmutation and the Human Consciousness, she shares this wisdom, helping readers prepare their minds, bodies, and spirits for the inevitable transition we all face. Welcome to the show, Anne.
Thank you so much. I am so honored and thankful to be a guest on your podcast. Thank you.
Well, I'm so glad that you're here because I'm excited to talk about your book. I know that you have hospice care experience, but before we talk about that, you've had a very deep connection with the spirit world since you were young. Can you, share a little bit about that?
Yes. So growing up, I grew up Catholic, and it's a very, not strict, depending on where your family kind of lies on the spectrum of strict to liberal. My family was a little on the stricter side. I grew up going to Mass every Sunday and Catholic schools. So we would go to Mass sometimes during classes. So it would be during the week. And I actually had wanted to be a nun for a while growing up. And I wanted to be a nun so that I could do exorcisms because I felt that that was so interesting to me and so captivating. And I went to an all-girls Catholic high school, and it was run by both nuns, and there were also former nuns teaching. And those nuns had said, they had explained to me that women in the Catholic Church are not, they're not looked at in the same way as priests are looked at. So they had encouraged me not to become a nun. But back to your original question, growing up in the Catholic faith, I had a deep belief in God. And at a young age, I was in third or fourth grade when this particular event had happened. And I used to take piano lessons, and in piano lessons, I was very, very bad at that because I have short fingers and I just was not very good at playing the piano. So no matter how much I would practice, I would inevitably not do well during my lessons. And I would come out crying and saying, oh, I did so bad. So one time during Christmas break, as most young kids do, I wanted to play with my toys and I didn't practice. And so I knew my lesson was going to be awful. So the first time that I remember something really, really happening for me, I had prayed to God that morning and I said, dear God, please, please, please do not let me go to piano this morning because I know that it's not going to go well. And I said, I'm asking you this one thing. I've never asked you for anything. This is all I'm ever going to ask you for. So we get into the car and I said to myself, well, I guess God isn't real because I'm going to piano. So we're driving to piano, and as my mom turns into my piano teacher's street, it's just covered in ice, and it is the only street covered in ice, and she can't get down it. She tries to turn. We keep spinning around. She tries to go in another way, spinning around. She said, well, I can't believe this is happening. I guess you can't go to piano today. And I thought, oh my gosh, that worked. That's such a minor experience. But, and also growing up though, so my mom has had gifts, but it was also one of those things that you don't talk about it. And I have listened to your podcast. I've listened to your interviews. I know you know what I'm talking about. So when I started seeing things, I mentioned it to my mom, and my mom, who had been told the same thing growing up, oh, let's not talk about that. Let's kind of put it, let's not tell anybody about this because it's not something that is going to go well with anybody.
Right.
So that was kind of the gist I had gotten. And I did not talk about it for a long, long time. And it wasn't until I was an adult that I decided there's got to be other people out there who see things, who I know you have heard a lot of things. And I don't have a lot of auditory soundings, but there's been twice that I have, and it's been very significant. And I don't want to take, I'm not sure if you want me to go into that. I'm happy to. I feel like I've already been talking. But it was so significant that I didn't realize how interconnected things were until the second time that I had heard something. Because the first time I had heard something, I said to myself, the next time I hear this voice, I am going to listen and I'm going to pay attention. And it ended up saving my life, saving me out of harm's way. So when that happened, the second time that happened, I was an adult. And then I had said, okay, I need to do a deep dive into this a little bit more. And that's when I really, really started to go into the pathway of not really putting up any more walls or borders as to what I'm seeing or what I'm hearing.
And did that, the journey that you decided to go on initially, did it conflict with your Catholic faith? Did you have a lot of doubt, guilt, you know, concern that what you were doing is, I don't know, on the dark side?
Of course, absolutely. And so because of what my mother had told me, I just wrote things down in a diary. And I have siblings who then found that diary and they read it. And then they thought I was crazy.
Oh, that sucks.
And we were so young. So it's so traumatizing when you're a kid. So that kind of taught me also, not just from a Catholic standpoint, but from a childhood standpoint of then my brother and my sister just laughing and making fun of me. And I was like, oh, why did they have to read that?
God, it's so hard too, because it stays with you for quite some time and it makes you fearful to share anything with anyone. Like, are they all going to respond the same way and think that you're off your rocker, you know?
Yes. And I really thought that was exactly what everyone was going to think. So after that experience in particular, I said, okay, I'm not even going to really write about these anymore right now until I can find a place to keep these notes where no one's going to read them.
Exactly. Oh my goodness. So what brought you to Reiki healing specifically? At what point in your life did you turn in that direction?
So around 2011, thereabouts, 2010 was when I had met my mentor, Cindy Riggs. Mm-hmm. And she was very, very, very much into Reiki. And she had done Reiki on me. So after that experience, and after a few years of doing energy work and understanding a little bit more about it through many, many sessions with Cindy Riggs, then I had said, I'm really interested now to start learning Reiki on my own instead of just having it done on me. I felt that I was ready at that time to begin my journey with Reiki. And that was becoming the master level at Reiki was fairly transformative for me, because there are blessings that are given to you from the person who is giving you that level of understanding. And these, you have to be able to trace back the lineage to the individual who had come up with Reiki, the Reiki practice. So that was probably, I would say, within the top five of my transformative, lifetime events for me. And once I had received those blessings for Reiki was when I had really started doing the work with people who are ready to transfer over, who are in hospice. So combining Reiki with the gifts that people have, that people like you and I have, of reaching out to other energies in the universe, combining those to creating a pathway to people for people, so that they're not as nervous about it. It's a little more calming for them and they know what to expect. So those two things together really, really pushed me forward.
Definitely. And I think, you know, my original teacher used to volunteer at a hospice center to do Reiki. And she and I would talk about that a little bit here and there, and what those experiences were like for her. So I was very curious to hear, when you first started to work with hospice care patients, what was that like? What was the initial, what's the word, I guess, concerns from the people themselves about dying? Like, what did the fears look like? What did you experience with that?
The majority of people, they were not sure, because even when you have a strong faith, they said, you know, I have this faith, but I don't really know, because maybe something had never happened to them. They had never experienced anything, or it was just at a time when people weren't going to talk about those kinds of things. Right. So it was, and also I found out that there were a lot of people who had had experiences, but given the where they grew up or the timing in which they grew up, they never talked about it. So even them being able to speak freely about it, that opened up doorways for them. And that opened up conversations, and me being able to let them know, like, that was 100% real, what you felt, what you heard, what you saw. And what's really interesting is not a single one of the individuals who I have crossed over or assisted with crossing over, they've never ever had any negative experiences, because there are people who I enjoy doing, I clear their houses or I'll clear them from negative attachments. But everybody who I had spoken to in hospice, none of them had ever had a negative experience with an otherworldly presence or energy, which was always, I thought, pretty interesting.
Yeah, that is very interesting. So when you were with these hospice patients, what stories, I guess, did they share when they were nearing kind of like the end? You know, were there visitations, things that they were seeing? I mean, I'm so curious about this.
Some of them, which is really interesting, and I find this very comforting. So I have a huge love of animals, and the majority of people had seen or dreamt that they had been near or with pets that had crossed over. And I think that that is so profound, because when you have an animal like a dog or a cat, dogs are a little bit more, I don't want to say people friendly, they're less mysterious than cats. I have had cats. Yes, I always feel like you got to work for it a little bit more. Particularly dogs, they would appear to a lot of the hospice patients, and they would say, I've seen my dog. And I would say, they're waiting there for you. And because a lot of animals, they're so much purer and more innocent than humans. And I say that because with animals, we all know that there are predators, they have times in which they are hunting and they kill for food. But humans, we kill for a lot of other reasons. So animals are just, that's just what they do in terms of, it's not for anything other than protection or food. So when they cross over, there's such a pure energetic presence in our lives. And for them to be there to let us know, it's okay. It's really okay. We're here. We're waiting. Right. And we'll be here to show you the way. So, and there were always people who had seen relatives also, but I always thought it was very significant that everyone who had a pet, that was originally what they would see, is just an immediate, this is what I'm seeing.
That's beautiful. I think if anything, I would find it personally very comforting, you know, to know that that's waiting for you. Because like you said, even the people, what I find the most interesting is that the people that you've encountered who, you know, have this very consistent, strong faith still have this doubt and questioning, even at the very end.
Yes.
You know, did you ever encounter anybody who really thought that there was this potential for hell, you know, waiting for them?
Yes. Yes. Sorry, that was a resounding yes.
Yes. Oh, no.
And it's, so when it's ingrained in, like, growing up with a particular faith, when that is ingrained in you, it is very, very difficult. I've felt like to explain to people there's not, while there are realms or dimensions that could perhaps rehabilitate a particular soul, there is no fire and brimstone. No one is going to be damned anywhere, unless that's something you want personally, unless that is your idea of a perfect afterlife. Yeah. That is not the intention or the purpose for us to be here. So, and I always feel like people who are ingrained in a particular faith or understanding of religion, it's surprising to them because they feel like, well, but that's what I've learned. That's what I've been told my entire life. And it's once those foundational layers are there, it's so difficult. I feel like even to people who are open, it's very, very difficult to convince someone otherwise. Yeah. So I've had people say to me, I hear what you're saying, but it's very hard for me to think that there is no hell, that there is no punishment, that there is no, there is nothing beyond for people who are horrible in this lifetime. Don't they have to pay a price? And the response is that, well, there's still a rehabilitative aspect for those who potentially were harmful to themselves or others. But again, there's no fire and brimstone.
Yes. If anything, I mean, like you said, I know it can be very difficult to believe if you grow up in a very specific belief system your whole life, you know, allowing yourself to think otherwise is a difficult task. However, I mean, if anything, it should be a beautiful experience, because what many of us have been taught is this very angry man in the clouds, you know, who biblically bothered a lot of people and all sorts of horrible, horrible things. Like, that doesn't exist. Like, if I'm grateful, you know, then we could imagine.
I also love how the majority of people believe that God is a man.
Yes.
It's a man. Yes. Of course, it's a man.
Yes.
Always a man.
Yes, exactly, all the time.
And that is even difficult to get people to understand, that there's no man in the sky. There is a creative, loving, healing force, but it's not a man.
From a personal perspective, I do think while we do see like the world changing and people opening up their minds little by little, you know, there's a lot of difficulty and people even allowing themselves to think differently, you know, that maybe there is something else, you know, maybe there is a reason why things were written a certain way. Maybe, you know, there were political agendas involved. Maybe we should question instead of just accept what somebody's telling us as fact. You know, I think, you know, that still exists. And I feel like there's a lot of pushback right now from, I'll just say, you know, certain religious communities is probably the best way to put it, to maintain the status quo when others start to question, you know, what's real and what isn't real. So I think, there's evolution, but baby steps, in my opinion.
Yes. Yes. And I was going to say, the patriarchy.
The word sums up everything. Umbrella term. Yes.
But I absolutely agree. And it's, I think too, the other very staunch believers are those who believe in nothing, who are atheists and say, what you're believing in is there's nothing there. And I like to ask them, well, have you ever experienced anything? And if you're not open to an experience, you're not going to have one. And then once you do, I would love to hear what they would be rationalizing it down to. Mm-hmm. So my ex-husband, atheist, and there was a trip we had taken to Cape Cod, and I had no idea that the place that I was renting, we pull up to it, and it was across the street from a cemetery. And really? this cemetery was old.
Oh no.
And we also found the burial plots for the individuals whose home it was. So we saw the name on the home, and we found their burial plots. And from day one, there were things that had happened inside that house. And one of the things that I always thought was really funny was my ex, who was an atheist, at one point, there was so much banging and clatter going on in the bathroom across from us. He jumped out of bed. He found there was a baseball bat in the bedroom. He grabbed it, ran into the bathroom, and came back and said, all the cabinet drawers were open.
Oh my goodness. That's so crazy. And what did he think it was?
He did not know, but he was not willing to say. Mm-hmm. And I said, these are the people who lived here. Like, they died here. This was their home. We're across the street from their cemetery, from their family burial plots. So what we did do, he said, I want to leave early. So that, to me, indicated.
Oh, my gosh.
It was so uncomfortable with the thought that there was something beyond there that we had to leave early.
That's hilarious. Oh, my goodness.
There were doors slamming. It was the whole nine, which to me, it was simply fun and wonderful. But to someone who wouldn't think that way, it was scary and weird and we need to leave.
We need to leave, but there's nothing there.
Yes.
It's nothing.
Yes.
It's nothing, but Oh my goodness. I wanted to ask you personally, since you've been, you know, working with hospice care patients, just in, on a personal level, have you pierced behind the veil? What have you seen in terms of what it looks like to transition? Or yeah, what's behind the curtain for you?
So a lot of people, they will wake up from a dream as they are dying. And I don't. And part of this is from meditations that I've done with my mentor to look into past lives and relive them. And I personally enjoy reliving the point of death and crossover. So some of the things that I have experienced and that I have remembered, I guess is the best word, is there was one experience in which the, and one common thread among all the past lives that I've gone through is the moment of death is extremely painless. And I always think to myself, it's over in a second, just get through that second. And in that second, then I skip from whatever is happening. Either there's been some with tornadoes, there have been some with plane crashes. And there are times in which I'm transitioning and I am in a technological bed is the only way I can explain it. It like a covered bed in almost kind of a floating tomb, I guess. And there have been times in which I have met the all-knowing being, and I don't know if it is would be considered God, but so one experience, one actual experience that I have had, and I was very young. I was in eighth grade and I was very sickly as a kid. And it was to the point of my mother getting, why do you keep getting sick? What is wrong? And it was strep all the time. It was constantly getting strep. So one of the times I knew because I had just finished maybe 2 months before then, another round of strep. And I thought, oh, my throat's hurting again. So I didn't tell my mom. And I had come down with a very severe fever. And I let it go for so long that at one point my fever was 104.7. And it had crossed over into essentially scarlet fever. Wow. And I passed out unconscious. I separated from my body. And during that time was also when I had encountered, it was a white light. And you think to yourself, I thought to myself, this should be too bright for me to look at. I shouldn't have to look. I should have to want to close my eyes, but it wasn't at all, not at all. And I recall exchanging essentially feelings. It wasn't a communication in terms of a speaking communication, but a communication through essentially the heart chakra. And growing up, my biggest question was always, well, if God made everything, what made God? And that was kind of in the Catholic faith. I just, well, if I made what made God? If you can't tell me that, it's very difficult for me to understand, you know, what came first, the chicken or the egg. Right. And in that moment of being surrounded by the white, I had understood that that's just not even in the realm of my human brain's understanding. Mm-hmm. I understood it feeling and that it's God is a perfect circle and always was here, always will be here. It's still hard for me to put into words, and again, it's hard to put into words because it was a feeling. It was transferred via just this feeling into my heart chakra. And I have since then seen that white in certain dreams and certain visions. And it's always, and I always know it's the same because it's that I should have to close my eyes because this is so bright, but I don't have to close my eyes. Because you feel like it should be like looking into the sun. And it's just not. And so when I hear people say, oh, I saw this white light, and I remember it, and I say to myself, I remember that, and it's so wonderful and so beautiful and magical. And for people to either not know that that's waiting for them or not want to know, that is sad to me. It's just heart-wrenching, because to know that that's waiting for you is magnificent. It's a magnificent gift.
Yes, it definitely is. And if people knew, or at least even had, you know, a little bit of that experience, it would change how, you know, change how they live their life or how they view the yes. world and how, you know, the decisions that they make.
Yes.
Because I think there is a lot of people, not, I can't generalize, but people in specific faiths, you know, live their way to avoid the brimstone, you know?
Yes.
It's a very limited yes. experience to make sure, okay, I'm safe. You know, when I cross over, I'm good, wherever it is you think you're going, I don't know. But yes, I think that we limit what we do just because we want to make sure that we don't cross that line. Like,
yes,
you know, potentially go burn
and out. And I don't want to say that there isn't the negative or bad. There is. I've also encountered that side. And what I can say, though, is that my understanding is that that's what those energies were created to do. In the world of duality, it's right. easy. It's so much easier to see the light or the good when there is also dark. So it's one of those things that, and I understand there's reason to be nervous or afraid of encountering some like a negative energy, but even they are here for a reason and a purpose and everything. So knowing that, you just become less fearful, I guess is the word. And I feel like the opposite of fear is love. So when I have encountered them too, saying to them, I do love you. I know that you don't know really what that is, but I love you too.
I would like to ask you some questions related to your book. So in your book, you do have 11, I'll call them spirits or deities or figures mm-hmm. that you work with in discussions about preparing for, let's say, our transition. Everyone's going to go through that. And there are some things that really stood out to me in terms of what would make your transition, quote unquote, easier. I'll just use that. you know, moving on to the next life, whatever that looks like for you. And a couple of things that were pointed out were, number one, forgiving self and forgiving others. Can you talk about why that's so crucial before we make our transition?
It helps us be less tethered to the earth. Mm-hmm. So one of the reasons that people have a difficult time transitioning is they feel that they have had people or situations left unresolved, feelings left unresolved. And it's either they have not forgiven themselves for things or they have not forgiven others for things. So sometimes people stay tethered to the earth to try and make sure that someone else understands that they're sorry, or do you forgive me? And it's so important to do that before we pass on. And if you don't do that, it's still okay, as long as you're okay with forgiving yourself for it. And because failure to do that is when we start saying, oh, I have this one thing I have to finish up. I have this one thing I have to do. And when you are preparing to transition, that's not the time to do that. It's right. just when you're nearing the end, that's not the time to do that. You have it's so important to get that done beforehand so that when you are ready to transition, you just go.
Yeah.
You definitely know, and you're ready.
And some of the spirits that you have in your book, such as, who is it, Kuan Yin, Aphrodite, I know they speak quite a bit about this. And I would love to know, just from even my personal perspective, how did you encounter these spirits? And how did you choose the spirits that you did for this book to talk about, like life and death and crossing over?
So the idea came to me through Thoth, the Egyptian god of writing and magic. And it was in a vision. And so once I had that vision, and it kind of sat with me for a minute, and I thought to myself, the idea took a while to kind of take shape and take form and how I wanted to kind of organize the book. And then through sessions with my mentor, we had gone through together. I said, well, what do you think of this energy or that energy? Because there were more who would have liked to have participated, but I wanted to try to take energies from different practices. So Archangel Uriel is Catholic or Jewish, and then you have Papa Legba, Haitian, Voodoo, Kuan Yin, Eastern, and then there is the Witch and Hecate, Pagan, the Morrigan. So, and Mimir, who is Norse. So I really wanted to get a cross-section of, and originally there were 10, but then I'd worked with Papa Legba before, and he had come to me again, and I thought, I feel like he should really be in this book. So during my next session with my mentor, I said, what do you think about this? And she had responded, well, there are 11 ascended masters, so it makes sense to have 11 in this book. So I said, done.
Nice.
So it was also, it wasn't just us or me picking those energies. It was making sure that those energies wanted to, and they were also coming to me and saying, we want to participate. We want to be in this book. So it was one of those two-way streets.
And what was your personal, for the book, you have really Anubis as the narrator. So yes. What was it like encountering him at the beginning? And then as you were getting through the book, what was it like communicating with him and learning from him?
Very, very interesting. And I always think it's one of the things I love about spirits or energies is when they surprise you. And I loved it. And a lot of times too, when I'm typing and channeling, I don't remember what's happening or what's being said. So I go back over it, and he's talking about his sense of humor. And I love things like that because it makes those energies so much more just on a personal level. I want to say human, but Anubis is clearly not human, but on a human level, so much more relatable.
Right.
So when, in terms of my channeling, of, I always feel such a great reverence toward any of the energies that I, because I feel so thankful that, oh, wow, thank you so much for coming here today. Thank you so much for allowing me to channel you. And thank you for your participation. So, and then encountering them, they're powerful. They are, some of them are fierce. So I do have a funny story about Papa Legba.
Sure.
I have a very good friend who called me one morning and she said, Kathy, Anne, I couldn't sleep last night. And I said, oh, you know what? I had an unusual evening that night too. And I woke up chanting and I read her my chant. I said, that's really odd. I read her my chant, and it was, at this moment, at this hour, give me your greatest power. And she stopped and she said, "What?" And I said, "This is just what I woke up chanting." And she said, "I had the worst dream I've ever had in my life." And she said it was, and who she described was Papa Legba.
Really?
And she said, "He wasn't after me, but he was after someone, and I saw it happening." And so she, what she had said was she felt very close to Mother Teresa. And I did not know this, but there is a prayer to Mother Teresa, "Little flower in this hour, grant me your power." It's very similar to the chant I woke up saying. And so I said, well, two things. I said, first of all, what you were seeing was someone who was calling out to him. And so what Papa Legba does in this book is takes your fears and makes you face them. So facing your fear, because once you face them, what there's nothing to fear. So Papa Legba will get you to stare your fear straight in the face, straight in the eyes. And that is a scary, scary thing. So, and I told her, I said, "You don't have anything to be afraid of." And she said, "It was just for," and for her, who had never encountered anything like that. And she said, "Kathy, all I could think was calling out. I wanted to call you at that moment and to tell you, please, 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 I don't know what to do. I need your help." And so I think that is interesting sometimes too, people who aren't experienced with that other side and see someone or an energy like Papa Legba, and their first thing is to be afraid.
Yeah.
Versus, "Wow, thank you for presenting me with this opportunity to see what's beyond what I'm normally seeing right now."
Yes, I think we are really, I can only again speak to America. It's like we are really taught to fear the unknown and yes. everything outside of the quote unquote norm, which is, okay, Jesus, the angels, God is demonic.
Yes. You know?
So that's it's almost instinctual that we would attribute yes. that to whatever it is we're seeing.
Yes. Yes. And so, and I think that even when sometimes people do see an energy or a spirit that is from the light, that's still scary to them. And they immediately, "Oh, I'm too afraid. I don't want to see this." So I always like to say, don't, you know, step into it. Because once you do, and once you see there's nothing that's fearful, the world is yours. The universe is yours.
Yes, that is super true. So what was your connection like then with Anubis as he was helping you with this book?
His connection to me was, so with him, the way that I had learned that he had wanted to be the narrator was I was just working out the introduction to the book. I wasn't going anywhere yet with it. I didn't have the guides down yet. It was just, let me do an intro and let's see where it goes. And all of a sudden he stepped in and I started typing and I did not know he was stepping in. So once I had finished about two pages and I saw that it was Anubis, I had said, okay. So one of the things that, and I should back up for a second. So I do have what's called a gatekeeper. And what I like to do is whenever I am doing anything regarding the other side, I have a gatekeeper who does not allow any negative or harmful energies through. So when I open myself up and say, okay, I don't mind opening myself up at this point, I know that the energy coming to me is not pretending to be Anubis, not pretending to be from the light. they are who they say they are because my gatekeeper would not let them through if they were not.
I see.
So once I had encountered Anubis, and once you feel that connection and that pathway, it's there. And so once it was there, and I had read what he had said in that, in those first few pages, and then afterwards I did a session with him where it was more of a meditation where I'm communicating and I'm not just channeling. Mm-hmm. And he had said, I don't want to be a in my mind, it's this deep resounding voice. I don't want to be one of the guides. I want to be the narrator. And I just said, thank you. Thank you.
Yes.
What else do you say? and other than thank you, and that is how it shall be.
Yes, definitely. So to see these spirits as you were putting, you were connecting with them to create this book, did they encounter you in your dreams throughout this
yes.
book? To share, what is it that you saw in your dreams?
So Archangel Uriel came to me in a dream before I had started writing the book. So before I even had the idea for the book. So once that had happened, I knew for sure that Archangel Uriel was one that I wanted in the book because of my previous experience with them in a dream. And that was, what was interesting about that dream was there was first just a line of purple, like a purple, almost like a laser. And I was in a classroom and the laser came through and I was looking at it and I thought, this goes somewhere. And so I'm following the purple, just continuing to follow the purple, and the purple light led into a, it was like a type of brick wall, but I can't say that it was brick. It, to my eyes, it probably looked brick. And the brick wall opened, and on the other side was just light and beauty and an energy that identified themselves as Archangel Uriel. So that was illuminating, and just the love that you feel and the understanding that you get from those types of experiences. It's so profound that it's life altering. So with Archangel Uriel, I knew, and I wanted, and another reason why Archangel Uriel is so wonderful in the book is that it provides an opportunity for those who are transgender or who identify as with pronouns of them or they, that there are energies out there also that are a they, a them, androgynous, neither male nor female. So that was one of those bits of information that I had no idea of beforehand, that, oh, these angels are androgynous. They are trans. They don't have a gender. So it's those types of experiences that then lend themselves to the book, because after having connected with Archangel Uriel, I knew what they would be able to provide for purposes of the book. Now, I'm trying to think. I know there was one who I had never connected. EA, the Anunnaki. That was one. That was an energy that I had not encountered before until the book. And that was one that was unexpected for the book and that was so powerful that I thought, how could I have missed this in so many sessions? How did I miss this?
What was your experience with that energy?
Very, it, it was an unusual type of energy because they're both, it's both to us, both alien and high level. So alien in that, and a creator energy, one of the creative energies. So when you're encountering an energy that creates, it's amazing because they're showing you this is part of what it looks like to create. This is part of what it looks like to have something that wasn't there before, but is now there because of your participation or your contribution to what the whole is going to be. And I think that that's something that all of us as humans maybe don't understand, that while we're all here individually, as a collective, we work together to create something that is on an energetic level, both profound and huge. But I think it's difficult for people because when we see ourselves individually, we're not seeing ourselves as the whole, as part of the whole.
Yeah, definitely. We definitely don't see the interconnection between each other's, you know, energy and what it is that, even if we can't see it, we're all creator beings and we're all constantly creating, and there's a ripple effect to what it is that we do.
Yes. And so connecting with the Mesopotamian or Sumerian empire was also something that I had never really done before. And that was on a pro. And so on that level, it was a new experience and an energy that I hadn't encountered before. And I had such a deep appreciation for afterwards. And I have since then done a little more of a deep dive into that culture and those aspects because it was just so interesting to me and incredible.
So I'm curious, like after you finished this book, did you still have encounters with these spirits thereafter?
Yes. Yes. And some of them, the Morgan is and Hecate are interested in continuing to do another book of spells that are more for current day, current times. There are some of those in the eighth chapter. I particularly love the egg cleanse. I don't know. So fun. But things like that, things to make your everyday magical, and using modern day techniques, modern day plants, modern day spices, modern day things to for people today. So there, those particular two energies are interested in continuing to do another book.
Nice.
And I, in Kali, is the goddess Kali is an energy that I absolutely love interacting with her, and I try to interact with her as much as possible. So I connect with her. I usually enjoy doing a meditation with her and allowing her to guide me through the meditation and take me where she would like for me to see or to learn, or the type of energy that she thinks that I need for a particular experience. So yes, I do still continue to encounter them, but there are two who, the most difficult two for me were Aphrodite and Kuan Yin, because it was like they were whispers. Mm-hmm. And so for me, I usually enjoy those thundering energies. Yeah. So they were so light and in whispers that they were very difficult for me to, those were the two very difficult chapters for me to try and hear. So those two, not so much, just because it's very hard for me to hear them.
So I think what I wanted to understand is, as you're working in these hospice centers, are you performing Reiki on the people that are there? And what is it? My first question would be, what does it look like when you're doing Reiki on someone who is about to transition? And number two, did Do any energies specifically come, like, work with you as you're doing this Reiki for these people?
Yes. Yes, yes, yes. So when I do Reiki work on someone who is in their transitioning phase, I keep my eyes closed because that enables me to see and connect much more quicker with them and to see the images that are coming to them. So a lot of times I will explain, I'm seeing this person. This is who I'm, oh, that's my grandmother. That's my grandfather. Or I'm seeing a pet and then, oh, and I'll explain, this is the hair. This is what I'm seeing. And they'll say, oh, I know exactly which pet that is of mine. There was one, and I remember one, and it was so interesting. I said, I don't know if you have any familiarity with the mountains or anything like that, but there is a woman poking her head around a mountain, but then she's hiding again. And the person I was helping just started laughing. And she said, that is my great grandmother. She was from Appalachia. But wow. And she said, but she's not very talkative. And I said, oh, so that's why she's hiding from me. So it's little things like that that provide confirmation. And confirmation, I think, is always nice, but for the person who is passing, for the person who is getting ready to pass, because it gives them something to say, you don't know me, you don't know anything about me, but this is what you're seeing. Mm-hmm. So I think that in and of itself helps people to grab a hold of something and say, you know what, I am comfortable with this now. I don't know how you saw what you saw, but you did. So I'm going to finish this ride. And I'm good. So what I strive to do is just for people to feel peaceful and calm and to know that it's not the end. It really is the beginning, and the beginning of your understanding of what this life meant, what your past lives meant, what your future lives are going to mean, and what your divine self does on the other side.
Definitely. And for people who, you know, are interested in reading your book, Transmutation and the Human Consciousness, what's the biggest takeaway for people?
Love. Love, understanding, and human connection. Mm. That is what I think, to me, that's what helps all of us get to that next step, get to that next place. And as humanity as a whole, keep striving toward those higher frequencies and higher vibrations, because when we all are striving for that, then there's no stopping anyone from making the world a better place, making just one person better, helping one animal. Just that's the takeaway. Just love one another and love yourself. Yes. It's real. It's real. The beyond is real. And people who listen to your podcast, they already know that, but I don't know. I always feel like confirmation, and for maybe somebody who isn't sure, even hearing that's sometimes all they need to hear, you know?
Yes. I remember quickly, I remember years ago I was doing readings at the Phoenix Psychic Fair, and you know, so many people come in and you have a timer and it's like, okay, I can only, you know, read you for 20 minutes. And then the next person, this lady and her husband or her boyfriend, I can't remember, sat down in front of me. And the first thing she said to me, it wasn't so much like, you know, what is my love life or nothing like that. It was, I'm afraid of dying. I'm afraid of, you know, of physically dying. And I was like, is that a question? You know,
what do we do with this?
it was so amazing. Cause I closed my eyes and I thought, oh God, what is going to happen here? I don't have a question. I just have a statement. Am I going to work with this? And I remember this man stepping forward, handing her this huge bouquet of yellow flowers, and it was her father. And I told her, and I was like, you know, if anything, it's going to be like a reconciliation. It's going to be so beautiful. And I remember this so profoundly because I was like, I hope I'm under, you know, I'm going to explain this correctly. And then I saw him take her up this ladder to some place that I don't have a word for, but it was a very beautiful thing. But the, you know, all to say that it is such a common fear. It's a massive fear. And as you stated earlier, even people who have been 100% dedicated to their faith, even at the very end, are fearful of what they're going to encounter. So I personally think, even with your book, I think it's super helpful to see how each spirit talks about what the transition process, you know, is going to look like and how much they want to step forward to help you kind of put those fears aside to remember that, yes, I mean, we are departing the physical, but it's a continuation of life, you know, just in a different way.
Yes. Oh, I love that story. Oh, not that the woman was fearful, but that you were able to give her, you were able to give her comfort.
I hope I did. To this day, I was like, I hope that was helpful, but it's such a universal thing. And it's very, I mean, there are only two certain, you know, what do they say? Two things in life that are certain, like death and taxes, right? And they're both true, right?
Yes.
Fortunately. Yes.
And it's knowing that you shouldn't be afraid and that your experience is here, you will build on them. So take those experiences and learn from them, grow from them.
Yeah, definitely.
We're all here together.
And it was so great to have you on the show. If someone wants to find you and your book, where can they find you?
They can find it on Amazon, Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble, Archway Publishing. And there is also a website, AnnEdgecliffe.com. They can go onto that. It is currently being recorded. So there will be an audiobook.
Oh, beautiful.
Out, I believe, next month. And with there are so many meditations in the book that I feel like the audio version will help those who are maybe wondering, how does it work with meditation? Because then it's just, you can kind of listen to it and drift with the voice.
Yes. And that's very, very helpful for people. And I completely understand. Cause if you have step by step by step, it's like, huh? Okay. Hold on. Let me put the book down.
Yes.
Try to remember.
Yes. Yes.
I completely understand that. Thank you so much for being on the show. I really did enjoy our talk today.
You are so lovely. Thank you so much. You are such a gift and so amazing.
Thank you.
I cannot tell you how honored I am. Thank you.
Thank you so much. And everybody, thank you for listening. And again, you can find Anne's book on Amazon. Until next time, Anne, see you soon.
See you soon. Thank you so much.
Thank you soon.